And Jack knows, because his bullshit detector works like a charm. He sees that I really want to stay and pulls back a chair for me. Then our coats are off, we're sitting across from each other, and I'm glancing around to avoid noticing that he's focusing on me like I'm the key to understanding the free fall acceleration of antimatter. Millicent begins transferring fancy jam thumbprint cookies from a fancy box to a fancy plate. I scan the wrapping for nutritional values, finding none.
So,
she asks conversationally,
how long have you two been doing it?
I gasp so hard, I nearly choke. Jack calmly pours his coffee, unruffled.
We're not,
he says.
You're not what?
Doing it.
Millicent looks between us.
Not even a little bit?
Nope.
Are you sure?
I think I'd know if we were.
Jack piles sugar in his mug, and I want to fling myself into an active volcano.
I certainly hope so. Oh, well,
she shrugs quaintly.
I guess it's for the best. You were always so protective of your brother. It would be a tad out of character for you to seduce his girlfriend.
Let's not use the word seduce before 11 a.m., okay?
Jack stands and starts moving around the kitchen.
And let's talk about something else, since Elsie's in the middle of an anoxic event.
I absolutely am. My organs are shutting down.
What else shall we discuss? I am but a helpless elderly lady. Nothing ever happens to me. Ah, yes. The neighbor's dog has been defecating on my lawn again. I'm considering hiring someone to go defecate on theirs. Would either of you be interested?
I'm a bit busy, Jack says.
A second later, a steaming mug appears in front of me. Jack cages me from behind, one hand next to mine on the table, the other fussing with something papery. He steeps a teabag in the hot water, and I feel his chest brushing against my back and hair as he says,
But Elsie is in the market for a new job.
I twist around to glare at him, but he's already back to his seat. Millicent, on the other hand, is giving me an expectant look.
I can't, and it's probably illegal. Sorry.
Second job offer she's refused this morning,
Jack murmurs.
Picky. No matter. I'll ask my other grandchildren then. Perhaps strongly hint that their inheritance will depend on it?
Less helpless elderly lady and more bitter old hag territory,
Jack says fondly.
Perhaps. What's with the tea?
She asks Jack.
Elsie doesn't like coffee.
Oh.
There's something loaded in that O.
You could have said so, Elsie.
No, she couldn't.
Jack's eyes hold mine from above his mug. The dimple appears, making my heart stutter. The air between us smells like Earl Grey, raspberry jam, and early Sunday morning.
But we're working on it.
My phone is long dead. There are no clocks in the kitchen, and I have no clue how long we sit at the table. I'm occasionally part of the conversation, but neither Millicent nor Jack asks much of me. And it's nice, being in this Smith limbo of sorts, focusing on the way Jack and his grandmother interact, a combination of teasing and deep, utter love for one another. I don't think I've ever been in a room so full of honesty before, but I'm positive that not a single lie has been uttered since I came into this house. It's exhilarating, but in a stomach-dropping way, like a roller coaster or eating blue cheese. Jack and Millicent, I discover, spend part of every weekend together, preferably through an ambush.
Last week's life or death emergency was that she needed Bitcoin explained to her,
he says dryly. It's obvious that he doesn't mind. I also don't get Bitcoin, I say after a long sip of tea, the third hot drink Jack's made for me in 12 hours. Not sure how this is my life.
See,
Millicent smiles triumphantly.
Greg's maybe girlfriend is on my side.
Jack and Millicent know more about each other's lives than any relative of mine ever did about me. She tracks with no difficulty names, places, events he mentions, and, in turn, he doesn't miss a beat when she announces that she'll wear a green dress to the Rutherford dinner, or after she complains that she finished her show and has nothing to watch.
You did not finish it, he says.
I did.
I got you 12 seasons of Murder, She Wrote. You cannot have watched them in 1 week.
There are no more episodes on the TV.
He stands with a sigh.
I'm going to switch the DVD. Be right back.
I open my mouth the second he disappears, ready to fill the silence with some comment about the weather, but Millicent is already giving me one of her piercing looks.
You're not a librarian, are you?
I clear my throat. No, I'm sorry I lied. It's a long story, but
I'm 90. No time for long stories.
What is it that you do, then? I fidget with the tea bag. I'm a physicist.
Like Jack?
Sort of. Not really. I keep my eyes on the mug. The state of my career is a sore point. He's a world-renowned professor. I'm just an adjunct. And he's an experimental physicist, while I'm
a theorist,
she nods.
Like his mom, then.
I look up and blink at her. His mom? Is Millicent getting confused? Like Grandma Hannaway before passing, when she'd mix me up with her least favorite sister and yell at me for stealing her apron?
You don't mean the one who died? Well, of course. He only ever had the one.
She scoffs.
It's not as if Caroline was eager to take over. Heartbreaking, watching those two boys grow up so close. Same house, same family. One with a mother, the other without.
Oh. I shouldn't ask any of the questions buzzing in my head. Millicent is clearly under the impression that Jack and I are something we're not, or she wouldn't disclose this. But how old was Jack?
When Greta died?
Greta.
About one. My son remarried just a few months later. They had Greg soon after. You see, for the first few years, it was me who insisted that we tell Jack nothing about Greta. I thought he could have a normal life, believing that Caroline was his mother and he had lost nothing. But Caroline was never fond of him, and well, it was her right to refuse. I shouldn't have interfered, because I made it worse. A few years later, he got into some trouble, like children often do, and Caroline screamed at him. Don't call me Mom. I'm not your mother. It was a moment of weakness, and Caroline did feel guilty afterwards. But by then, Jack knew. She sighs. Hard to explain to a 9-year-old that everything he believes is a lie. That he shouldn't call Mom the woman his brother calls Mom. Millicent massages her temple. Jack seemed to take it in stride. Except that he stopped calling his father Dad, too. I became Millicent. And ever since, he's been very distrustful of lies. Very preoccupied with boundaries. More than is healthy, I believe.
She busies herself stacking mugs on top of the empty cookie plate. For the first time since I met her, she looks her age. Frail. Old. Tired. Her mouth is downturned, bracketed by deep lines.
And yet Jack and Greg grew up thick as thieves, despite all that. The one saving grace.
I remember Jack taking care of Greg after the dentist, and my heart squeezes. I try to picture them as kids, picture Jack being anything but his tall, assured, authoritative self, and fail miserably. Are you sure she... Greta.
I want to ask if Turner was her last name. The reason Jack's a Smith, but not really a Smith. Are you sure she was a theorist? Physics runs in Jack's family, when the only thing that runs in mine is eczema. Why do you ask? Just, Jack doesn't seem to like theorists very much. Millicent gives me a look.
He likes you, doesn't he?
She speaks like I'm the least sharp cookie in the jar, and I flush. But he once wrote an article that,
oh, that,
she chuckles, like it's a fond family memory. First day of kindergarten, meeting Goofy at Disneyland, and that time her grandson sent an entire field of study into a tailspin. That had nothing to do with theoretical physics. He was just a teenager acting out, angry because of what he'd found out about Greta. But he's a man now, a good one. Too bad I can't leave him my money, or he'll just divide it up between the rest of my ungrateful family. What had he found out about Greta? Was the entire Smith-Turner hoax about his mom? Did he hate her? Was it some sort of revenge on her for what? Dying? Oh, it's too ridiculous. Did he write the article because of her? I must be asking too many questions. Millicent's expression shifts, first to guarded, then to vacuous.
I forget, she says with a ditzy shrug, even though she doesn't.
Millicent, I'm certain, hasn't forgotten a single thing in her life. Not Greg's name, and certainly not what led Jack to be who he is today.
Jack will tell you, when you've been together long enough.
No, we... Really, Jack and I are not... We're not doing it, I say. Ugh, my brain cringes so hard it folds in on itself.
Oh, I know. This is something else altogether, isn't it?
It's nothing at all. We're not even friends.
Right. Her tone is almost pitying. Well, you'll figure it out in your own time.
Figure out what?
DVD player's all set,
Jack announces, emerging in the doorway.
And I've left detailed instructions on how to switch to the next season since the ones I wrote last week are gone.
Oh, yes, I had to throw the notepad at your Aunt Maureen when she said my green pullover was too bright.
Of course you had to. Can I drive Elsie home now? Or is the abduction still ongoing?
Millicent huffs.
Do take her, please. I'm sick of both of you. You're not nearly as entertaining as Jessica Fletcher.
She kicks us out as unceremoniously as she welcomed us in, making a symphony of faux irritated noises that are belied by how hard she clings to Jack's hug.
I'll stop by later to shovel some snow, he promises.
Fine, but do not come in. I'll be busy with my show.
I know. He kisses her forehead. Be good till next weekend. Have fun writing spite wills.
I shall, she says defiantly before slamming the door in our faces.
Does she really? I ask on our way to the car. The snow crunches under our feet.
What?
Write wills for spite.
Probably.
Why?
Pettiness, boredom, loneliness. When I was 16, my father made a comment about her roast being dry, and she pledged $1 million to a bunny shelter.
God, why?
It's a vicious cycle. Most of my family does seem to gravitate around her because of the money, which is why Millicent wields it like a weapon. But that doesn't endear her to the family members who are normal human beings and believe that threatening to vengefully pledge your estate to J.P. Morgan Chase just to make a point might be pushing it too far.
Is Greg one of the decent ones?
Greg's the most decent. But he prefers to avoid Millicent altogether. He likes it when people get along, which cannot happen if she's in a given quantum space.
Like Polly's exclusion principle. We exchange a smile next to the passenger seat of the car. You like her, though.
She's an absolute monster. But she does burrow into you after 30 or so years,
he says fondly, like a tick. I laugh, my breath a gust of white in the space between us. Should we explain to her that I wasn't really dating Greg?
Nah, Millicent's too busy launching feces wars to care about any of that.
I try to sound casual. Do you always call her Millicent?
It's her name.
I mean, why not Grandma or Gram or Granny or Mama?
Mama?
Whatever. Babushka, maternal forebear. Jack's expression goes inscrutable.
It's good, calling people by their names. It minimizes misunderstandings.
I think I see a split second of hesitation. Like, maybe he's thinking of saying more, but it's fleeting, swiftly gone in the glistening snow.
Come on, I'll take you home before your roommate sends out an Amber Alert.
I nod, because I do need to sort out the mess that is my life in a Smith-free space. But then something occurs to me. The rest of my life is going to be a Smith-free space. A Jack-free space. I'll probably never see him again. Why would I? The circles we move in are a Venn diagram with a little overlap. Maybe we'll meet at a physics conference 2 years down the road when I'm still an adjunct teaching 40 classes a week and he's workshopping his Nobel lecture. But my arrangement with Greg is likely over, which means that this is it. The last time I'll see Jack. This man, this maddening, impossible, space-taking man who seems to know me despite all that I do to not be known will be gone from my life. I should be eager to go back to simpler times, when I used to spend 0 hours a week in his company and my brain wasn't made of guacamole, but what a waste. What a surprisingly terrifying perspective. And that's why I stop him with a tug on the sleeve of his coat. Why I open my mouth and say with no forethought, no premeditation, and a lot of reckless panic, "You can take me out." It comes out with no pauses or intonation, just a bunch of sounds smushed together, which Jack, judging by the knot between his brows, did not understand. I clear my throat, take a deep breath. If you still want to, and if it's okay with Greg, you can take me out. Jack just stares, motionless, reactionless, for way too long.
Take you out in the mob way?
No, no, that's not at all what I blush. I'm cold and tired and my head hurts and I have no idea what I'm doing and why won't he understand? I can come to your place. I can take you out. He nods, slowly.
In the mob way.
No, I notice it. The amused gleam in his eyes, like he knows exactly what I'm trying to say. I press my lips together because I don't want to encourage him. I don't want to smile, but I'm about to. I hate you.
Sure you do.
Why is everything so difficult with you?
I like to keep you on your toes.
Listen, let's hang out, I say. This feels foolhardy, ill-advised, exciting. Just try. See what happens. Would that be okay?
It would,
he says after a brief pause.
Under one condition.
I frown. Making demands already?
Always.
His mouth twitches, but he's back to his opaque self.
If we do this, when you're with me, I need you to be honest. No pretending you're someone else. No trying to be whatever you think it is that I want. You say what you think, and when you can't, at least let yourself think it.
No lies, Elsie. His jaw sets. Just you. I nod. And then I realize that I have no idea how to do that. And I laugh. A little sad. A lot terrified. I can try. He nods.
That's enough for now.
You should be honest, too, I add. No lies on your end, either.
I don't lie often,
he says simply. Hearing it makes me think of what Millicent said about his past, and my heart clenches. I've seen Jack being brutally, needlessly honest. Lying? Not so much.
And I can't see myself lying to you.
You don't even know me.
I don't, he admits.
He studies my face for several moments like he cannot stop on the cover or the first page, like he needs to read the whole book every time. Then he leans into me, and the icy chill of the morning melts away in his heat. My eyes catch on his cheekbones, the line of his jaw so sharp it could cut a heart. His lips are full and upturned, a start of that lopsided smile of his that makes me angry and weak-kneed, and he bends to murmur in the shell of my ear.
I'd like to, though.
My hairs rise. My spine coils like a silent bowstring. And for the first time in my entire life, I'm thinking of kisses, of skin, of waking with Jack this morning, of his hand between my shoulder blades, of the ink on his arm, of his lips, which look full and soft, and he hasn't shaved in a while, and he smells good, and a click behind me. Jack straightens and pulls the passenger door open. That tension inside me is still buzzing. I feel almost dizzy.
Get in,
he orders, low and hoarse, and maybe not really to me. I slide into the seat, and it sinks in that this might be real. Happening outside my head. Me taking a shot at being myself. 16. Fundamental Forces. From glass.abigail.2@bostoncollege.edu. Subject, Thermo 201.
Hiya! I haven't come to class this semester because I can't find the room. Where do we meet again? Could you draw me a map? Thanks.
Egregious.
Dr. L says the word with soft G's and mysterious vowels, like English is a French language that the Americans are just borrowing. I'd find it amusing, but it's our first meeting since relaying my job news, and I can't feel anything but anxiety. He asked me to come over, and I really didn't want to, what with the snow and the crock of shit that is my schedule. And yet, here I am.
Egregious that they choose another candidate, he repeats. Perhaps an appeal is in order.
Knowing who the winning candidate is, I doubt there are grounds.
Georgina Sepulveda, you said?
I nod.
And who would that be?
I'm taken aback that any living physicist wouldn't know of her work. But Dr. L can be narrow-minded when it comes to experimentalists. Maybe rightfully so? She's behind the Sepulveda model, a brilliant particle physicist, and she was a Burke Fellow years ago. I look down at my knees, then back up to Dr. L's deep scowl. I'm sorry, Dr. Lorando. I know this is disappointing, but
I wonder if Smith Turnell influenced this search after all.
My hand grips the armrest of the green chair. He, I doubt it.
We cannot put it past him, can we?
I clear my throat. I'm convinced that he did not.
Elise, he wants Smith Turnell to get his comeuppance just as much as I do, don't you?
My stomach sinks and I lower my eyes, mortified. Dr. L spent the last 6 years counseling me, and here I am,
a screw-up, cavorting with the asshole who nearly ruined his career. Not being the Elsie he wants. I need to go back to it. To Elise, hardworking, undeterred, laser-focused. This is a huge setback, but I'm regrouping, I say, trying to sound optimistic. In terms of finding a job for next year, I...
But you have a job. Several, in fact.
Yes, absolutely. I take a deep breath. But these adjunct gigs are time-consuming and leave me little time for research. And I really want to finish developing my...
There is always time for research. One must want to find it.
I close my eyes because this one hurts like hell. The Elsie he wants almost slips away, but I hold strong. You're right.
Could you not simply teach fewer classes?
I breathe slowly, in and out. Financially, that's not a possibility.
I see. Well, sometimes money must take second place.
I grip the armrest, feeling a gust of frustration that he'd think me greedy for wanting to buy insulin and live in a place without mutant moths. It's immediately swallowed by guilt. This is Dr. L. I wouldn't even know the Nielsen-Ninomiya theorem if it weren't for him. I take a deep breath, forcing myself to mention the idea that's been swelling in my head since my morning at Jack's. While there is no dimension in which me working for him would be feasible or appropriate, maybe there is some promise in what he said. Someone recommended that I consider a postdoctoral fellowship or another research-only position. Dr. L looks at me, alarmed for a split second, and then sighs.
We have been over this, Elise.
Right. But we talked about theorists. Maybe some experimentalists might be interested in...
Unfortunately, no. I asked widely, and I am very sorry, but no suitable physicist was interested in hiring you as a researcher.
He says, and my stomach sinks even more. I lower my eyes to my jeans. God, I'm an idiot. A total fucking idiot.
Elise,
he continues, tone softer.
I know how you feel.
He circles his desk, coming to stand in front of me.
Remember when you started your doctorate? How helpless you felt? How I guided you through developing your algorithms, publishing your manuscripts, making a name for yourself within the physics community? I can help you now, too.
I think about all the things he's done for me, all the things I owe to him. I wonder where I'd be without him and come up empty.
Do you trust me?
I nod. I don't get a formal rejection from MIT till Wednesday night. I'm in the middle of what's rapidly becoming a semesterly endeavor, relearning Noether's theorem to be able to teach it to a mostly snoring classroom at 8 a.m., only to forget it once again by the time my 9:30 thermo lecture comes around. My brain is a colander. When the iTwat rings, I look up. Cece is writing her MILF. Manuscript I'd like to finish, on the couch, but she meets my eyes.
I'm sorry it didn't work out,
Monica tells me after a long explanation that includes the words institutional fit 4 times. I appreciate the call. Academic rejections are often one-line emails. More often, tumbleweeds. It's not your fault, Monica, I say.
Or is it?
Cece mutters, which has me smiling. I understand the situation, I add, just to see Cece sprain an eye-rolling muscle.
I want you to know, Monica says, that new positions will be opening soon. I thought I'd left my hope bloody and beaten on the side of the road, but apparently it's still breathing.
Next year?
In 3 to 5 years. Several theorists are set to retire, and the dean won't dare close the tenure track lines. I hope you'll apply again.
Go on without me,
my hope says, contemplating 6 more semesters of Noether's theorem.
I'll only slow you down.
Of course I will. And let's keep in touch. Grab lunch once the semester is over. I'd love that. Fantastic. Was there any feedback you'd like to give me regarding the search? Jack's voice rings in my ear.
You say what you think, and when you can't, at least let yourself think it.
Okay. Well, Monica, you know that highly irregular meeting we had before my interview? Maybe you should have told me that I had no chance. Also, you overdid it with the cow decor. Also, your son is a psycho, and I hope he dislocates his dick while publicly humping a fire hydrant. Just thank you for everything you've done. I appreciate it. Jack might have a point. Contemplating the truth is a nice, cheap thrill. By the time I hang up, I have 2 new emails. One from a student asking for my credit card number to buy 1,500 live ladybugs. One from Greg.
Hey, Elsie. I've been wanting to get in touch, but Jack said it was better to wait, and, well, I hear you're now in the know. Sorry you didn't get the job. But it's so cool that you're a physicist. What are the chances? Maybe Jack can help you find something else? He has tons of connections. Anyway, would you like to get lunch in the next few days to debrief? I'll buy. G. P.S. I have been informed that I attempted to urinate on/near you. I am deeply regretful of my actions. I'm considering my sudden lunch popularity. Take that, middle school bullies. And almost don't notice Cece sitting next to me at the table. Hey. She's eating croutons straight from the bag, picking them out with chopsticks. As per my usual policy, I don't ask.
How do you feel?
I feel... What a good question. Like all the plot balls that I was juggling have dropped to the floor. And I have no idea what comes next in my story. This is not your character arc, Elsie. More like a character bump.
Could there be a positive side?
I cocked my head. Positive?
Now you don't have to juggle anymore. You can use your hands to flip people off, scratch your butt crack, become a finger puppeteer.
She shrugs.
If you woke up tomorrow and could choose anything, what would you do?
My eyes, quicker than my brain, fall on the upper left corner of my computer where my Word doc sleeps its neglected slumber. I'd finish my work on 2-dimensional liquid crystals, I instantly think. But how, without the MIT job? And that ball has dropped, which means that Cece sighs.
Okay, you know what? That was a hard question. Let's just daydream about the future.
Sure. I lean back in my seat. Income inequality? Nuclear proliferation? Climate change?
I'm always up for discussing how rising sea levels will lead the merpeople to claim the lost city of Miami, but I was thinking more next year. Money.
I sigh. UMass has open instructor slots, and so does...
No, listen. I don't want you to do that. I've been thinking about this, and I think I can swing it.
Her earnest, heartfelt look is only slightly undercut by the waving of a Caesar crouton.
Kirk is giving me a job. He said he'll need me at least 2x a week, and he wants to pay me like an employee. His team is actually drawing up a contract.
I frown. Why does Kirk crop up so much in conversation? And above all, where does Kirk get the money?
He's a scientist.
As a scientist myself, let me ask you once again, where does Kirk get the money? A spine-chilling thought occurs to me. Please tell me he's not Elon Musk.
You monster! Take that back.
He's the only rich scientist I can think of.
Kirk is Kirk, I promise. He'd never write petulant tweets about how the world is unfair to poor billionaires. To be honest, I doubt he knows what Twitter is. He's like, her eyes shine a little. A total nerd, Elsie. In grad school, he created this material that everyone wants. Then he built a company around it with his friend who has an MBA. But the company is huge now, as in ridiculously big. It has stocks and stuff. Cece's getting animated. Croutons fly all over the room. Hedgie has noticed. So now he has all these functions and meetings he needs to go to, and he hates them, but he says that if I'm there, they're more bearable, even though I know nothing about science or money. Hang on, I frown. What's the name of the material? I keep forgetting. Some kind of resistant blah synthetic blah fiber blah blah? She taps her lips with the chopsticks. Taurus, maybe? I wish I were drinking because this deserves a spit take. Cece, are you fake girlfriending the dude who invented Tauron? Oh, yeah, that's what it's called. Tauron is literally everywhere, I blink. He must be a millionaire. I think he is. And that's why you don't have to teach 69 classes next year. She gives me an expectant look till I sigh and mutter, nice. Thank you. Anyway, I'll cover rent, so you can work a reasonable amount. One or two classes. And the rest of the time, you can stay home and do your research about sparkles. Crystals. Crystals. And we can spend our nights eating Gruyere and ranking Wong Kar-wai's movies from most to least cinematographically poignant. Does she know how much you like Twilight? I smile, trying to remember one single Wong Kar-wai movie. Pretty sure we did a two-day marathon 3 years ago, which I spent solving equations on my mind's blackboard while Cece was in full Stendhal syndrome. 2046 would win. She smiles dreamily. Probably. I don't like Kirk. No, I don't like the way Cece looks when she talks about him. Because I've seen her act like that only about foreign movies, or Sapir Whorf, or hedgehogs. It just doesn't seem like a good idea to like one's fake boyfriend that much. But I don't have a chance to say it because Cece is standing again, rummaging in the cupboard for wonton strips. And because my phone is buzzing with a text, the first I've ever gotten from this number.
Are you free tomorrow night?
17. Displacement. I wear black jeans, a cute sweater, ankle boots. I leave my hair down. Then I pull it up in a bun. Then I let it down again. Then I braid it. Then I leave it down. I haven't told Cece where I'm going because she's not home and I'm physically unable to send her a text explaining that I am going out with Jack Smith Turner. Maybe. I'm still not positive that the reason he wants to see me is not to stealthily substitute my insulin with Frappuccino. Maybe I should make a safety call, make the investigator's job easier when they find my corpse in a swamp. But the car is already there when I get downstairs, and I simply slip into the passenger seat. The cabin smells like leather, Jack, and bad ideas. I should say something. Hi, how are you? Did you have a good week? Favorite Teletubby? Off your elections thoughts. I've done this a million times. Gone out with people. A million fake dates. Then why? Why? Why can't I? Why?
I think, he drawls. I just heard your head explode.
I turn to him. He's handsome in a near painful way, and my head is still in mid-explosion.
Want to go back up?
The smile, uneven, amused, all-knowing.
Try this another day?
I shake my head before I change my mind. I want to do this now. I swallow, face straight ahead. I think.
He starts the engine. Look at you.
Look at me?
He puts his hand on the headrest of the seat to back out of the spot. His fingers brush against my hair, soft, distracted.
Yeah, look at you, telling the truth. Two friends are in town for a conference, he tells me, and another friend is hosting a small get-together. I figured with witnesses, you'd be more relaxed.
He's probably right, but also, I don't want to intrude.
I'd love for you to meet them.
Is it a good idea, hanging out when his friends are around? I'm probably very lame in comparison. I'm just not that entertaining. Not at my best, and definitely not with Jack, who so far has gotten my worst. Are all your friends scientists? I ask.
Some.
A pause.
Jesus, I can't think of one who isn't.
I nod. It's truly hard to expand one's social circle. Academics become friends, hang out, and above all, sleep almost exclusively with other academics. Because academia is a bit like the Olympic Village, sans opening ceremony with condom distribution. We park in front of a narrow brownstone, and after ringing the bell at a yellow door, he turns to me.
Hey.
I turn too. Under his coat, he's wearing jeans and a dark Henley, and he's big and attractive, and it occurs to me for the first time in years that nights in which people go out together, not all nights, but some nights, maybe several nights, don't just end with a hug and good night. I shiver.
Honesty, he reminds me. You don't need to impress anyone. No need for the usual party tricks.
I smile. I was going to carve a recorder out of a carrot and play it for your friends. He gives me a long look, like I'm the single most charming person he's ever met.
Not gonna lie, that'd be pretty cool.
Even before I knew about his mother, Jack always seemed to me like a lone wolf, set apart from the rest of the Smiths. It's instantly clear, though, that his friend group is his chosen family. There are over 15 people in the house, and not only are they all delighted to see him, they welcome me just as warmly. The single exception, Andrea, Jack's MIT colleague. She stares at me like a vaguely displeased gargoyle, probably feeling awkward about the fact that I didn't get the job. Beer? Sunny, the engineer who owns the house, asks. She's a dark-haired ball of energy. Wine? I'm ready to spend the rest of the night holding a drink I don't want just to avoid looking out of place, but Jack says,
I'll have one. Elsie doesn't drink.
I never told him, but of course he knows. Anything else then? Water? Soda? OJ? Maple syrup? Sunny frowns into her fridge. Milk?
Whole?
Jack asks. 2%.
Keep your white water.
You spoiled little Smith brat, raised with unpasteurized emu tit juice. She punches his arm. Remember when Katie was pumping and kept her bottles in the fridge of the student lounge?
And Kroll used it?
For his coffee. Sunny shakes her head. Good times. Jack has friends, inside jokes that go back a decade, and a whole group of smart, kind people who tease him because they care about him. And I'm not sure what to do with this piece of information, aside from being mind-numbingly fascinated. I briefly wonder if they know about the article Jack wrote, whether they support him, what their opinion of theoretical physics is, and then force my brain to shut up for once. I should learn how to have fun at some point in my life. One of the people visiting town is a biologist from Stanford. He's as tall as Jack, an impossibility, I thought, especially within the nerd community.
This is Adam,
Jack says after they shake hands warmly, in that affectionate but understated way of men who like each other a lot but will probably never openly admit it. Adam looks like he might be a few years older. Dark, frowny, intimidating, though the beautiful girl next to him looks anything but intimidated.
And this is...
She takes a step forward and enfolds Jack in a tight hug. Jack! He hugs her back with a smile.
Hey, Al. Nice to see you're still putting up with this guy. Thank you for your service. Elsie, this is Olive Smith. No relation to my terrible family, lucky her. She's Adam's... Adam, is she still your fiancé?
Adam nods with a mildly irritated expression. Jack grins.
Haven't picked a date yet?
She has not. Adam whines, sternly though.
Oh, put him out of his misery.
At 28? What am I, a child bride? Olive looks between me and Jack. Have you guys picked a date? I wish to die on the spot. I wish to melt into the sweet respite of nothingness. Oh, we, I glance at Jack, hoping he'll come to my rescue. He just gives me a look halfway between pleased and amused, holds my eyes, and says,
Not yet.
I step closer to pinch him hard in the ribs. He stops me with a hand on my wrist and a delighted smile. How did you and Adam meet? I ask him in a desperate attempt to change the subject.
In undergrad, I did a summer internship at Harvard, in the lab where Adam was a PhD student. He ran the worst southern blot I've ever seen, Adam says. It was a rough 3 months. I was gently discouraged from going into biophysics. Then, a few years later, I moved to Pasadena, and he was in Palo Alto, and we started hanging out. Hiked our way around California. And then he introduced me to Olive when... Al, how did you and Adam meet again?
He asks with the tone of someone who knows the answer full well. She grins. Why, Jack, Adam was a tenured professor, and I was but a lowly student.
Graduate student, Adam interjects, speaking to me. And not my student.
But in his department, Olive adds impishly. It was all very, very scandalous.
Jack smiles. You should sell the movie rights, Al.
I'm hoping for a Netflix miniseries. Something sexy, like Bridgerton, you know? It's clearly a bit Jack and Olive do a lot. Adam lets out a long-suffering sigh.
Anyway, he changes the topic. How are you, Jack? Very entertained.
Jack and Adam are somewhere north of circumstantial friends. In a couple of minutes, they are absorbed in conversation, talking about people, things, places I'm not familiar with. Olive and I gravitate toward each other, sitting on the couch, while all around us Jack's friends laugh and joke and embody the epitome of successful adulthood. Do you also not know anyone else and feel like the dumbest person in the room? She whispers at me. I nod. Everyone here is a bit older, and I try not to imagine the academic positions they might have. What do you do? I ask Olive. Cancer biology. Just finished the first year of my postdoc. I'm probably going on the job market in the next couple. She makes a face, sipping on her beer. Are you planning on staying in California? Would be nice, since my friends are there. But honestly, academic jobs are so rare, it'll be hard enough to make sure Adam and I are in the same city. Do you have a plan? She shakes her head. The good thing is Adam has grants. We're hoping that whatever institution wants me will take a look at the money and decide that we can be a package deal. But if they don't, she shrugs, we might have to negotiate a spousal hire. I smile. Then you'll set a date? She leans closer with a surreptitious expression. Her skin is 90% freckles, and I've known her for 5 minutes, but I want to be her friend. I've said it already. We're getting married in April, during spring break. Adam just doesn't know it yet. How does that work? So he's into nature, hiking, that stuff. I'm taking him to Yosemite, where a park ranger will marry us in a quick and painless ceremony. Then it's just going to be the two of us for a week. And the bears, I guess. Oh God, I hope the bears don't eat us. She shrugs the thought away. Anyway, Adam doesn't love people, and we can always have a party later. But this, I think this is the kind of wedding he wants. The one we're meant to have. I picture Olive and Adam alone, trekking hand in hand under the ponderosa pines. It's not difficult.
Why don't you just tell him?
I should, right? She laughs softly. I was in a pretty bad place when I met him. He did so much, still does, always taking care of me, and I want to take care of him for once, you know? Make him feel like I've got him.
I nod and then stare down at my empty palms.
When I really let go, imagine that you let me take care of you too.
Have you and Jack been together for a while? Olive asks, and I look up at her. I can tell that the Elsie she wants would say yes, that she loves Jack very much and likes the thought of someone who'll take care of him.
But honesty.
For a second, I picture myself blurting out the entire story. How I fake dated Greg, then met Jack, then met Jonathan. But I doubt Olive is familiar with the concept of fake dating, so I sanitize my version. This is the first time, actually. It feels weird to say the opposite of what someone wants, and it feels downright horrible when Olive's response is a disappointed, "Oh." I swallow. "I'm sorry."
"No, no,"
she smiles, reassuring. "I'm sorry about earlier, asking if you're getting married." I shake my head.
"We're just getting to know each other."
"That's great. It's nice to hear that he's over his,
I don't date, let me set boundaries and make it clear that this is just about sex,
phase." Her impression of Jack sounds more like Vin Diesel, but it has me thinking, I have no idea what Jack wants from me. Olive is the second person to mention how important boundaries are to him. He hasn't set any, but he also said that he was attracted to me, and if what Jack wanted from me was sex, what then? Honestly, no clue. I don't have much experience. Not because I ever bought into the idea that sex is something precious, but because it felt like a means to an end, a way to ensure that the person I was pleased with me. Sex never happened because of any attraction I experienced, but that's okay. Maybe I never craved it, but I also never minded it, because it wasn't for me. With Jack, though, something's different. Perhaps because he sees more of me than anyone ever has. I find myself thinking about last Sunday by the car over and over, tethered on the edge of a kiss that might not come, tense, heated, spellbound. There might be something here. Or it might be nothing. What's certain is that I'm more curious than ever. If something were to happen, it would be for me.
"Did you guys meet at work?"
Olive asks.
"Kind of.
I'm a physicist too, though I'm an adjunct."
"Ouch."
I laugh.
"Yeah.
You like teaching?"
"Nope.
Lots of high-def pictures of butt rashes that are too deadly for people to come to class. Sifting through those don't leave time for research." She laughs too.
"I bet. I did not like TAing. It's nice being a postdoc. None of the bullshit of being a grad student. None of the responsibility of being a faculty member. Just research."
"Sounds like a dream." She gives me a surprised look.
"You didn't do a postdoc?"
"There weren't any positions. But my PhD advisor says it's for the best. I'll move to a faculty position earlier."
"But do you want to move to faculty earlier?"
"It's complicated. But I trust him. I owe him a lot, so..." I sigh. Olive scans my face, large eyes assessing, and then says,
"In my experience, we all want to trust our mentors, but they don't always have our best interests in mind."
"In what way?"
"Just..."
She chews on her lower lip, pensive.
"Academia is so hierarchical, you know? There are all these people who have power over you,
who are supposed to guide you and help you become the best possible scientist, but sometimes they don't know what's best. Sometimes they don't care. Sometimes they have their own agenda.
Her expression darkens.
Sometimes they're total shit buckets who deserve to step on a pitchfork and die. I wonder what happened to her. I even open my mouth to ask, but Adam turns to us, as if feeling the shift in her mood.
Olive, do you have pictures of the tux Holden bought for his wedding? Jack won't believe it's sequined.
Olive brightens. It's totally sequined, and it's amazing. We end up chatting, first the four of us, and then others, too, for what feels like minutes but turns out to be hours.
While Andrea is telling the story of how her advisor showed up completely sloshed at her thesis defense and started offering digestive cookies to the rest of the committee, the cushion next to mine dips, and I hear,
"Everything okay?"
It's Jack, murmuring in my ear, arm resting behind me on the back of the couch. He's surprisingly close, but I don't pull back. Your friends are fun.
I figured you'd like them more than me.
I kind of do. I smile, thinking about Millicent, Greg, Olive, thinking that he has great taste in people. And then notice something on my thigh, a small pouch of almonds. What's this?
Glycemic level control. His mouth quirks. Or you can feign on me, since it's a hobby of yours.
Did you steal these from Sunny's cupboard?
He gives me a look.
I shared an office with her for years, and she once left a urine sample for her doctor on her desk.
He stares at my lips while I laugh silently.
I'm not going through her cupboards.
I shake my head. Out of the corner of my eye, I notice Olive and Adam looking at me. No, at us, in a way I cannot quite understand. I focus on my almonds, then go in search of a trash can for the wrapper and...
Elsie?
Georgina Sepulveda is in the kitchen, beautiful and kick-ass. She's tall. I didn't fully grasp how tall when Jack was nearby dwarfing her.
So glad you're here. I've been wanting to talk to you, but Jack was the usual shitlit and refused to give me your number.
She rolls her eyes.
At first, I thought he didn't have it and just didn't want to admit it.
But you're here, which means he was just hoarding it, like a dragon.
God, I knew he'd be like this when he found someone. You and I should become best friends just to spite him.
Her smile is wide and warm, and it's instantly, violently, mortifyingly present in my mind that the last time we met, I acted like a toddler with little bitch disorder. I look around like an idiot, in search of, what,
a teleprompter?
This is mortally embarrassing.
I didn't know you were here.
Just got here. Faculty meeting ran late for no reason. The entire thing could be summarized in 2 15-second TikToks. She shrugs, moving closer. I clutch my almond wrapper like it's a terry cloth monkey.
Georgina, George, please.
Georgina is my mother. And my grandmother. My great-grandmother, too, probably. We should invest in a baby names book.
Oh,
I clear my throat. My contributions to this conversation are priceless.
Jack's in there if you...
I know. Like I could miss him when he's standing next to Adam Carlson. They're the Mount Rushmore of STEM academia.
Anyway, will you have lunch with me next week? I want to chat with you, but not in Sunny's home.
She shudders. I can't be in here without thinking of the urine sample. Professionally, my life sucks a bit. Psychologically, I'm not, as some would say, healthy. Musically, I should hire a tuba to follow me around. But on the upside, I've been killing it in the lunch invite department.
You want to chat with me, I repeat, just to be sure.
Yes, partly because Jack is my closest friend, and it would bug him if I stole you from him even just a bit.
but mostly because the last time we met, I acted like a total bitch, and I want to make it up to you.
What?
No, I'm the one who ran away like a lunatic. My first reaction to finding out that you'd gotten the job was unforgivable and incredibly messed up. I acted like a bitch. Yes, you totally did.
George's smile is triumphant. To make it up to me, you will let me take you out for lunch.
I slow blink. Very well played.
Thank you. She dusts non-existent specks off her shoulder, and I laugh.
I see why Jack likes you so much.
I see why Jack likes you more.
Her smile softens.
Next Wednesday, okay?
I nod. Sounds great.
Jack and I leave a few minutes later. I exchange numbers with Olive, and Sunny hugs me goodbye while Jack is getting the car, whispering that any urine sample rumors I might have heard have been greatly exaggerated. She also swears that if Jack and I break up, she'll side with me because she already likes me more. I laugh on the doorstep.
It makes me feel guilty for stealing your almonds.
Oh, they must be someone else's. No nuts in this house. They're like so gross.
In the car, I'm contemplating the idea that Jack researched, bought, and packed a diabetes-friendly snack just for me when he asks,
"Where to for dinner?"
Oh, something happy and surprised flips in my chest at the idea of the night not being over yet.
I like everything.
He merges into traffic.
Excellent. Some of my favorite stuff is everything. Now tell me what you want to eat.
I look at his near-perfect profile. He hasn't shaved in the last couple of days, looks a bit tired. I wonder if he's been up and about since morning, if he hasn't had anything since lunch. He's huge, probably always ravenous. Simple stuff, big portions.
Burgers, I say.
He gives me a nice try look.
Yes, Elsie, I do like burgers. That wasn't the question, though.
I scowl. How does he do this? How does he always?
Want me to pull over so you can get out and stomp your foot a bit? I growl.
Judging from the smile, he absolutely hears me.
Okay, what do I want?
Well, cheese. I'm always in the mood for cheese. But cheese is not really a meal, and the places where it might be are usually too fancy and—
Say it,
he orders.
What? What you're thinking.
I'm not—
Say it.
Really, I'm—
Say it.
Cheese, I almost yell, shocking myself.
Jack smiles, satisfied. I know just the place.
You're joking.
Nope.
We can't. Not here.
Why?
Because, Jack waits for me to finish the sentence. When I'm unable to, the ever-present lower back hand nudges me inside the cozy heat of the restaurant. Of Miel.
This seems sadistic, I point out, even for you. You underestimated me then.
Two? The hostess greets us, chirpy.
Would you prefer a table or a booth?
Jack looks at me like we're a drug cartel and I'm the ringleader who needs to sign off on any decision. Damn it, this honesty business is hard. Okay, so not the booth. Jack's legs are skyscraper long, so he'd probably hate it. But tables are less private, which he also might hate. He leans into my ear.
Stop building observational models about what you think I'll like and just be honest about booth, I grunt out.
The hostess makes an obvious mental note to tell our waiter that I'm a weirdo, but her,
if you'll follow me,
is impeccable.
Excellent choice,
Jack murmurs while we weave toward the table. And all I can think of is that 2 weeks ago, Elsie, bright-eyed and future hopeful, sat in this very restaurant across from Jack and contemplated slipping under the table to power drill his kneecaps.
Tonight, Elsie gapes at him as he tells the waitress,
I'll have your craft beer, and she'll have the cheese board.
I lift my eyebrow. What happened to me asking for what I want?
The cheese board is what you want.
It is, but how can you be so sure?
Ikagawa ordered it the other night. I saw the way you looked at it.
How's that?
Like people look at porn.
Laughter bubbles out of me. Okay, you want me to be honest? I'm gonna be honest.
Go for it.
Brutally honest. I take a deep breath. Maybe it's the booth, but it almost feels like we're alone in his apartment again. Just the two of us. Intimate. Sometimes when I can't sleep because I'm nervous, I look up cheese on Google Images and I just scroll. I scroll infinitely. And I feel peace.
That's nothing.
God, his dimple.
George's entire YouTube history is pimple-popping videos.
I snort a laugh into my water. By the way, she mentioned you wouldn't give her my number. Jack's beer arrives. His tongue pushes against the inside of his cheek.
I had a very disturbing mental image.
What mental image?
Of George reminding me daily for the next few decades that she got to take out the girl I liked before I ever did.
I laugh, picturing her starting her maid of honor speech with, Webster's dictionary defines sloppy seconds as... Then I realize who the bride would be in the wedding, and my face is suddenly cooked medium rare. Whoa!
You look like that again.
Like what?
Worried.
He searches for words like he's not sure himself.
Vigilant. Overthinking.
I play with the cloth napkin. How can you always tell what's in my head?
Same way you can tell what's in everyone's head.
I frown. I just look. Try to pay attention to what people want.
That's what I do. Except that I don't care much about most people, but I can't stop paying attention to you.
He shrugs. There is something so utterly, disarmingly honest about him.
So I look.
Is it really that simple? Is that what's happening here? What am I thinking now?
You have questions.
I laugh. That was a softball.
It was. Just ask the questions.
They're kind of... I exhale a laugh. They're not really just casually getting to know each other questions. They're not normal.
You're not a normal person,
he says in a way that feels like the opposite of an insult.
And I'd rather you ask than overthink.
I close my fingers around his glass, feeling the condensation pool in my palm. Then I pull my hand back into my lap, wet, cold. Okay. Back at Monica's place, you said that you don't date. And Olive told me the same. He laughs.
Olive?
We may have touched on your love life. I flush.
Ah, Olive.
He nods.
She and Adam are... I think she wants others to have what